The fourth case of the morning is number 054717, the United States against Bilal Mohammed. Mr. Buting.
May it please the court, counsel. A vehicle traveling eastbound on the interstate on the Texas Panhandle was stopped by a Texas trooper for a traffic offense, and a subsequent search uncovered 3 kilos of cocaine in a unlocked suitcase in the trunk with no identifiers. The vehicle was occupied by two women, Linda and Tanya Juarez, who claimed to have no knowledge of the cocaine in the trunk of their vehicle, gave some different stories initially, but ultimately claimed that they had been following Mr. Mohammed, who was traveling a short distance ahead of them in a rented white Nissan, and that they were, in fact, returning to Milwaukee where they lived. The search of the vehicle, the Taurus that they were driving, did reveal a rental contract entered into by Mr. Mohammed, in which he, the day before, had rented the vehicle to be returned in Milwaukee. The women were arrested but never charged in Texas state court or in any federal court. Instead, the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of Wisconsin obtained an indictment against Mr. Mohammed, alleging that in the city of Milwaukee, in the state and district of Wisconsin, he attempted to possess cocaine with the intent to distribute.
One of the gists of your argument struck me as a claim that there is no such attempt offense, that there's certainly an offense of possession of cocaine with intent to distribute. But for some reason, this is an exception to 18 U.S.C. Section 2. There's no attempt to possess with intent to distribute.
That's not my argument. My argument is not that crime doesn't exist anywhere. It doesn't exist under these facts.
Well, but why not? I mean, he's from Milwaukee. He does lots of things in Milwaukee. Derive from these facts that he is attempting to commit the offense of possession of cocaine with intent to distribute in Milwaukee,
One could, except the problem is he has already completed the crime in Texas or Arizona.
Several states, as you
point
out.
Several states.
Yeah.
But the offense was completed down there, and it never...
Not the attempt, though. He completed the actual offense. That's why I get to this question, whether you're really taking aim at the idea of an attempt offense at all here, because he certainly completes the offense, if you accept the linkage between the Juarez car and his car, in several other states. And now but he's still attempting to commit that offense in Milwaukee.
Well, what they've alleged, the way they've charged it, and I think they've done that in order to get around the problems of United States versus Tingle and other cases where the only contact, the only links to Wisconsin would normally be considered mere preparatory actions or actions prior to the crime and therefore not probative of venue. In order to get around that, they've charged this as an attempt possession with intent on the assumption that the specific intent was not just to distribute it somewhere, but that it was to be distributed in Milwaukee. Now, the statute doesn't require any specific intent that one possess cocaine with an intent to distribute it in a identified specific location. The crime is completed if you are in possession of the cocaine and you have the intent to distribute it anywhere.
Well, but you could say that. I mean, it sounds to me like then maybe... Let me ask you this. Do you think it's impossible for a crime charged as an attempt to be, for that prosecution to be brought in a district where the attempt was intended to come to fruition? I mean, whether it's, you know, securities fraud or whether it's, you know, attempt to rob a bank and you make all your preparations for it in Illinois, but you intend to slip across the border to Wisconsin and rob a bank in Beloit instead of, you know, in northern Illinois. I mean, otherwise, it seems to me an attempt might be put in place and the completed crime might indeed be intended to come off in a different jurisdiction, and venue rules would would, is it your sense that venue rules would not permit that prosecution, my bank robbery example?
The bank robbery, I believe there is a case of that, on that, which was not cited in any of the briefs, but I could find it for the court later if you'd wish. But there is a case that's that, similar to that, that said that where they tried to prosecute someone in Georgia, I think it was, when they the bank was actually robbed in Florida in a different state, and they said that those the actions done in the other state, it's because they were not essential elements, they didn't constitute elements of the offense, that it was not proper to prosecute a bank robbery in a state where the robbery didn't occur. Now, it really depends.
But
I
this
think,
is, I mean, the question then is an attempt. I mean, you know, you get all the machines you need, you cameras, whatever it is you need to rob a bank. You assemble all of that in Rockford, Illinois, and you're all set to go, and you have, you know, maps of your bank in Beloit or what have you, and you're intercepted by the police, and it's clear that the target of your effort is the bank in Beloit, not just some random bank in Illinois.
Well, it would really depend on the specific statute that you're trying to apply venue to. I mean, that's one thing that the courts say, is that you do have to look at the statute that establishes venue, and I think the case law is pretty clear that when it comes to drug offenses, there's a big difference, for instance, between a plain distribution charge and a possession charge or a conspiracy charge. And when it's a conspiracy charge, if the government had charged that, I think venue probably would have lied here, because the acts that were done here, the minimal acts of arranging travel and that sort of thing, took place in Wisconsin. But when it's a possession, when it's charged as a possession offense, the offense is completed under the statute when the elements of knowing and intentional possession of a controlled substance with the intent to distribute it are completed.
Well, I mean, it is in a sense, but if what they're trying to do is possess with intent to distribute in a particular area, it does seem to me that the government has a strong interest in prosecuting the intended target of the drug business, if you will, in the area where the drugs were designed to be distributed.
Then they have to do it with the right statute, and this is not the right statute. Plus, they're trying to have it both ways. They want to say that that was his specific intent, and yet they say that the jury should not be allowed to determine that. They denied, asked the court to deny a jury instruction on venue, when at the same time they're arguing that's a disputed fact as to what his intent was.
Well, certainly it's a disputed fact. You dispute the fact that this effort on his part, and I think they might have had trouble charging conspiracy here. I suspect they might have seen problems. But this effort on his part was targeted to Milwaukee, and it's the judge who resolves that question here. The judge decides that the, you know, Eastern District of Wisconsin or the state of Wisconsin, if you're thinking constitutionally, is the place.
Well, not under United States versus Massa. If venue is in dispute, and a jury instruction is requested by the defense, then that instruction must be given. And the government's argued that it was never in dispute, and that's how they could therefore let the judge decide as a matter of law. But it's very clear under the case law that if venue is disputed in the case and an instruction is requested, it must be granted, and failure to do so is reversible error. I'm into my rebuttal time, but if I could save a few minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Budding. We'll hear now from Ms. Blackwood.
Good morning. I'm Elizabeth Blackwood. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. I was also trial counsel in this case. Your Honor, I would submit that venue was proper in Wisconsin because the defendant clearly took substantial acts that occurred in the state of Wisconsin.
Is that essential to your case? In other words, I notice in your brief you do rely on the fact that there were some steps taken by the defendant actually in Wisconsin, arranging for the women to travel to the Southwest, or things of that nature.
Correct.
If those were not in the case, if this individual, this defendant, as far as the record shows at least, had purchased a quantity of controlled substances in the southwestern United States, and in fully intending to ferry them with help to Milwaukee and to distribute it in Milwaukee, would you have a case?
That's a good question, Your Honor. I think we would be a little more hard-pressed to prove that he did commit acts within the state of Wisconsin to establish venue here. But we do have those acts because he left Milwaukee with his cousin, who obviously was going to be the mule, witting or unwitting. When that plan failed because they were searched in New Mexico on the way down, he then calls the girls who are going to be the witting or unwitting mules of the cocaine by car. And it is at that point that he makes arrangements and rents the car at the Phoenix airport on the same day he picked up the girls from the airport, women, girls, and destined that car for Milwaukee by contractual arrangements, arranged that that car would be returned to Milwaukee.
Why weren't those initial steps that were taken in Milwaukee simply preparatory acts? I'm concerned with cases like Tingle and cases of that nature.
I would not call those acts preparatory, Your Honor. I would call those acts clearly acts which are placing the entire movement of that cocaine in action. He's putting wheels to it, in effect, by getting the mule to come to Arizona with him, by getting the girls to fly from Milwaukee to Arizona to carry the cocaine back. I would not categorize those as preparatory. I would categorize those as substantial acts towards the commission of this offense. And Your Honor, Judge Wood is correct. I think we would have been hard-pressed to have charged conspiracy in this case because, as I said from the outset to the jury in this case, we don't know whether the girls were witting or unwitting. We don't know whether the cousin was witting or unwitting.
Can't charge. Conspiracy doesn't necessarily show that these are anything other than preparatory acts for purposes of an attempt, right?
No, I understand that. I'm just explaining why that charge was not chosen.
I understand, but I mean that's neither here nor there in fulfilling your obligation on the attempt charge.
Right,
and it's this is a theory right on the edge because he certainly possessed, on these facts, a jury could conclude that he possessed the cocaine with intent to distribute it in Texas, among other places. You know, as far as I know, these laws are still there in Texas, and why it doesn't get charged down there, where you've clearly got venue, he's there. He, as he points out, he could have gone anywhere. How you show that from the panhandle of Texas, he's going to wind up in Milwaukee, or he's going to change his mind and go to Oklahoma City, or he's going to get worried the police are on his trail and distribute them in Missouri or anywhere else. It's highly speculative.
I don't think it is speculative, Your Honor, based upon the circumstances here. First of all, he is from Milwaukee, and he travels from Milwaukee to Arizona. Second, he establishes by contract that this vehicle that's carrying the cocaine is to be returned to Milwaukee within
the same period of time,
as it would take to drive.
That's true, but then it isn't. I mean, these contracts are modifiable, and he, in fact, returns in Oklahoma City, doesn't he?
He does, but the cocaine is gone now.
Right, but I'm just saying the fact that he wrote in the contract, where I'm going to return this car to Milwaukee, doesn't bind him to return the car to Milwaukee. It might not show that he's all the way at the level of an attempt offense.
It doesn't bind him, but it demonstrates his intent. And Your Honor, I misspoke. The car that was dumped in Oklahoma City was the vehicle that he was driving. The car, of course, that was interdicted remained in the state of Texas until
right,
it was returned
course,
to the
yeah.
owner. With respect to the instruction, yes, the issue was raised, but there was no serious dispute in terms of what the facts were in this case that would warrant a need for the instruction. And I think Judge Randa was right to deny it in this case. The defendant made it very clear on the record that the issue in the case was going to be the credibility of the Juarez sisters. And the defendant made it very clear, both in opening and closing statements, that that was the crux of the defense here. whether or not the government could prove the defendant's connection to the cocaine in the car and the knowledge of his cocaine in the car. So I would submit that Judge Randa was very much correct when he denied the request for the instruction where the facts were not in serious dispute. And Massa says that in Massa, the defendant requested the instruction and objected on the grounds of venue. And in Massa, they said there was no serious issue of fact that warranted the instruction.
But do you think it was the defendant's burden to come forward with evidence showing some other destination for the drugs?
Massa seems to imply that. I recognize that the defense has no obligation to put forth evidence, but the defendant certainly has an obligation to put forth an argument or a position as to what the evidence would show otherwise. All the defendant said was that, I don't think there's sufficient venue. I don't think there were sufficient substantial acts connecting this event to the city of Milwaukee. And I disagree with the court's ruling. The court never proffered any facts or any theory of what the evidence showed that would have shown that that venue was in serious dispute. The whole defense was the government has not established that the defendant knew there was cocaine in that car and did not establish his connection to the cocaine. And I finally want to address the last issue, because I acknowledge that I addressed it very poorly in my brief, and I'd like to address it now. That's the third issue where the issue of counsel was put forth in evidence to the jury and was argued. The government's position is that this evidence was properly placed in evidence and commented on in closing, because what the defendant was doing in that case was not consulting counsel, if indeed there is any attorney-client relationship, which we don't know. But clearly, the defendant was seeking to obtain counsel for a third party. So this is not anything like what any of the cases that are cited by the defendant. Grunewald, that's a case where the defendant invoked his Fifth Amendment before the grand jury. Williams, where the defendant invoked his right to a lawyer during questioning.
But would you agree, though, that from a policy standpoint, for the government to say, you know, Smith said he wanted a lawyer, or Smith was trying to contact a lawyer, ergo he must think he's guilty, is a very troubling proposition?
Your Honor, he contacted a lawyer, and his statement was, they may need a lawyer.
Right. Now, I understand in your case, in the case before us, that's how I read that exchange, that he's saying something about the two Juarez sisters.
Correct.
He's not talking about his own need or whatever. But then somehow it's turned into, you know, even if he thinks they might need a lawyer, if you need a lawyer, you must be guilty. If he thinks they need a lawyer, then maybe he's trying to protect his own back.
On the contrary, Your Honor, I think I very clearly stated during argument that the whole point of putting that into evidence was to show that he had guilty knowledge of what was in that car. It is beyond comprehension that an individual under those circumstances who sees somebody simply pulled over for presumably a traffic violation, if he had nothing to do with it, immediately before he knows what's going to happen, and in the same connection where he's telling the girls don't let them search the car, he gets on the phone with a lawyer, apparently, and says they may need a lawyer. That evidence was critical for the government to show his guilty knowledge of what that trooper was going to find in that car.
Well, I mean, that's an inference, but I suppose any encounter with the police might make you think a lawyer would be handy.
But it's not his encounter. It's the encounter of people very remotely related to him.
Well,
and they're being pulled over, apparently, on the interstate by a state trooper, which you could presume was for a traffic violation. First he calls them and says, don't let them search the car.
Right, nobody's complaining about that.
Exactly, but this is the context of that phone call. And that's why I think that the government was able to argue very persuasively and correctly that when his next call to apparently a lawyer saying they might need a lawyer establishes his knowledge of what was in that car and his connection to it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Blackwood. You have a minute left, Mr. Budding.
Taking the last issue briefly, the problem was not just the comments made that they might need a lawyer. The government also introduced evidence of all of his almost daily contact of these phone calls with this attorney, Laster, throughout the whole trip, inferring that really she was either being unethical or criminally involved in this herself somehow. And that really put him in the Hobbesian choice of exercising his right not to testify and leaving the government with that inference, or testifying, giving up his attorney-client privilege, trying to explain what the nature of the contacts were with the attorney. So it's more than just the argument that he said they need a lawyer. It was his whole use of the lawyer that they used. Your Honor asked about preparatory acts. The only contact, the acts that did occur in Wisconsin, really are nothing more than mere preparatory acts prior to the crime. Because if you look at the case law, what they say is, if it's not conduct that constitutes an essential element of the offense, then it's a mere preparatory act prior to the crime. And I submit that that's what occurred here. The completed crime of possession with intent to deliver or to distribute was completed in Texas, Arizona, or New Mexico, and the conduct that took place up here was merely prior to that.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel in the case. The case will be taken under advisement.